And good morning.
Good morning.
How many of you have ever heard of something called feng shui? Most hands go up. How many know what it is? What I'd like to talk about today is this phenomenon that we seem to have embraced lately, which is the rearranging of our living quarters or our working quarters in order to give us balance. And I support this. I like to do this. I think all of us have felt at times in our home when we want to rearrange furniture because it feels fresh, it feels new, it feels like we're starting over. And then if you're like some of my mother and my grandmother, other people in our family, you decide after a week or two you want it back the other way. And then maybe another room this way, another room that way. Well, that is really rudimentary feng shui, as I have come to understand this. Now, you all may know this from a book that was written recently called The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. And what the author speaks of is the fact that when we are organized in our own lives through our surroundings and our possessions, then we are better and more appropriate channels for spirit and new life, and a new way of looking at things. Now, feng shui comes from the East, from Korea, Japan, China, in this area about 6,000 years ago. And actually in Korea, they call it huang shui. But what it is it's having to do with balance and with the organization of our outer atmosphere. As a matter of fact, what they did in these cities in the East was to use feng shui to begin with for the placement of buildings next to bodies of water as adjacent to smaller buildings so that there was some type of rhythm to the building of the city. I think we've seen this in Washington, D.C. Everybody knows that in Washington there are streets that are built, according to some people say, secret orders from a long time ago from the Masons or groups like this. But what it is, basically, is a way to make sense of our landscape in public, and feng shui to make sense of our landscape in our homes and inside. You know, in my time in ministry, I met a fellow named Tony, and he took every class that you could take in personal growth. It wasn't that he was just at church on Sundays. It was that he would sign up and go overboard and work at getting the work, as he called it. In other words, his life was one continuous circumlocution of working to be better. And I watched him take classes in Reiki, Kirlian photography, things that we do, some of us do, in unity as part of our spiritual discipline. And he said, the more that I am trying to do, the less I feel like I'm getting anywhere. I think I'm going to change where I live. And I remember him saying, when I move, I'll need your help, and I'll be fine. And I said to him, I said, Tony, what is it in this whole thing that you're really seeking more than anything? You've taken all the classes, you've done real well with them. And I said, but I sense that you still have some irascibility or something that's not working. And he said, well, it just doesn't work. Maybe I don't work. Maybe I'm just wrong. And he said, but I know that through the affirmations of prosperity, I got some new clothes. So I'm thinking what I'm going to do is join the Episcopal Church. And I said, makes sense for you. And he said, well, it seems to be progressive. And I said, I just don't get this other stuff. And one of the things that I realized that he didn't get was that what we're doing, whether it's feng shui or affirmations or book readings or any of the things, the disciplines we engage in, we are attempting to bring new life to our circumstances, a new way of being, a way that's receptive and fresh to the spirit within. So as I think about the rearrangement of my mental furniture, then I know that the outer will reflect that. So what I'm trying to say is we can go do these things outwardly, make no change inwardly, and all we have is a different looking house. So that's fine. And some people don't ascribe a spiritual motive to this. But I am interested in this because it has achieved such a level of popularity. One of the things that I think is important that we remember in this discussion of feng shui is that we are organizational creatures. We like patterns. We like a discipline. And we don't particularly care much for insecurity. But I'm going to tell you that there is a wisdom in insecurity. And the wisdom of it is to realize that this moment here and now is all that you have. There's not a particular security you can have out there because things at any moment can happen to disrupt the plans of what you've made in your mind or the way you have arranged your mental furniture. In your home, it's not going to move unless you do it. And here, in your mind, things are going to move regardless of what you do. You see, I properly like ritual. I think it has a place. And I think it should always represent what is inside us. And throughout the years, we've seen that those who have ritualized God and theology and things like this have done so in an effort to make sense of what they were feeling inside. If you hear a common strain here in what I'm saying, it is bringing it back to us, our thinking, and our way of being. And I personally think that the best way that we approach life is simply to be. You know, when we're babies, they say we have two fears, falling and loud noises. But anybody that's observed babies know there's also the hungry, the tired, and sometimes the pain. And that's all that they really have. As they grow up, they acquire certain concepts from the people around them who have arranged their mental furniture and their mental way of being and placed it in the opinions that this child will receive. And as you know, I've said, we carry those into adulthood and we let them hold us back so many times from things that we would like to maybe achieve or do in our lives that we don't do because we've been told we can't. And you see, I think that it's wonderful to arrange the furniture in your house in a way that is aesthetically pleasing as well as something that is a sacred space for you. But I'm also saying if the thoughts don't line up behind that, you simply have a different place and you wonder why you don't feel differently. Now, if we go a little deeper into feng shui, you'll know that there, if you look it up, there's a circle. And they talk about the north, the south, the west, the east, northwest, southeast, northeast, southwest, all the directions and ways that things should be placed for those directions. For example, money is southeast, harmony is northwest. We could go on with these type of things, but it is very, very, in a way, a disciplined way of placing your furniture, placing your belongings. It also talks about having things with rounded and sloping curves instead of sharp edges. I understand this because we're visual creatures. We see things and they make an impression even if we're not aware. And you can know this especially in the last 20 years because before this thing called the internet, we had to turn on CNN to get information and we thought it came too slow. And now we're bombarded with things that travel at thousands of miles per second to get to our computers to enlighten us about what's going on in the world that they feel we need to know about. We're making subtle judgments every day. We are arranging thoughts in our minds every day, and we're doing it on autopilot. And I'm here to suggest that perhaps we can interrupt that automatic flow, that we can chart another course for ourselves, even if it's subtle. I've heard it said that many people think they're thinking when what they're really doing is rearranging their prejudices. And I've seen that to be true, and I'm guilty of it myself. I've done this because I feel like my concepts are so sacred and wonderful about things that I don't really need to let them go. All I need to do is reprioritize our renumber, our restructure, and I'm okay. But anybody will tell you that's tried this, it's very difficult to let things go that have been in your mind a long time. We have memories. And people say, well, if I'm doing new thought right, if I'm doing unity right, then the things that have bothered me will never bother me again, and they're forgotten, and they're put aside, and I don't have to think about them anymore. But the truth is, we don't do that. We have a memory, and we can remember properly those things that were such a trauma or so challenging to go through, and even though we've made it right or we've walked up above it, we still remember what happened. I'd like to say that when you have that memory, when you realize and say, you know, I once went through that and I'm getting that feeling again and maybe I didn't do it right, there's a different way to look at this. There is something you can do to clear the clutter in your head and to be at peace with things that happened in your life. I call it landscaping the problem, the challenge in. And what I mean by that is this. We all know places in our lives where the biggest challenges that we've had to face have become some of the greatest ground on which we stand. There is nothing like a person who has been enlightened in a place of former, what you might say, even though it's not a word, endarkenment, and has come forth to the other side and said, there is another and a new and wonderful way to live. So this business of landscaping is something I also look at when I study this feng shui, because I saw a small, I guess you would say a square about size of a floor tile, and what was in it was some artificial turf and some water and some sand and a small rake and a tree that was upright. All these things were seemingly opposite, but they worked together. The water seemed exactly right, proportionate to the sand in the box, to the ground. It looked like I was looking at something from up above downward. And I thought, that really is beautiful. The tree was perfectly manicured. So what we had was the energy of the flow of the water, the setness of the ground, and the uprightness of the tree. And all these seeming opposites became one in what I call a one song of beauty. So are the opposites in ourselves, the things that I talk about when I say welcome home to you this year, that wasn't just a tagline. I'm meddling. I'm going to go deep inside. I want to. And I think you want to as well. I think you want to know exactly what makes you the way you are and why that's so. And I think first we have to remember that the wake of the boat doesn't drive the boat. So that when we look backwards and we say it could have been, it should have been, I wish it had, we're engaging in ultimately self-defeating behavior because life presents itself new at every moment. So these obstacles in our mind that we've pushed over here after we face them, or maybe we're still facing them and we rearrange them in order of their priority, we may need to do this right now. We may want to let that go. And so we arrange these problems in a mental feng shui in a way that we can make sense with our world and not feel like we're too challenged. But I'm saying the things that you push away, the things that you push down, they're going to come up. Much like holding a beach ball under the water, eventually it pops up. It's been said, feelings buried alive never die, and I certainly agree with that. There is no way to run from the things that we disown. Nathaniel Brandon, a very, very good psychologist, wrote a book called The Disowned Self in the 70s. And he said that what we suffer from is not properly understanding those parts of ourselves that we needed escape from. So when we make an escape from them, we also need to make an agreement with ourselves that we learned from them, that we got the lesson inherent in them, that we saw them as the gift they were to us. Some of the most, quote, negative things that you can imagine have become some of the most positive gifts for people who made a decision in favor of themselves and to grow through and not just go through the things that they face in their lives. When you arrange your mental furniture today, when you think about it, even if you don't start the process, even if you just catch the idea. One of the things that I'd like you to realize is that thing, and I think we all have them, that occupies the biggest space in your mind or your heart, that you want to push over this way, that you may not want to talk about, that you don't really want anybody maybe to know about, can be the thing that if it's handled correctly and if it's thought out thoroughly and if it is presented in the light of God's love, and things in the light do much better than things in the dark, can be your greatest asset. There is no need to run from who and what you are, ever. You are no surprise to God. As a matter of fact, and I know this is a little controversial, but it's something that I believe very deeply, even in the most twisted of human behavior that is dripping with human ego and negativity, is the divine twisted. It is the flip side of somebody thinking that they can get good out of something purely negative, that is obviously negative to someone else or to anybody who has eyes. It's still the divine impulse turned another way. So good is present even in those places that we say are dark and lonely or bad. That's why we say we call forth the divinity of Christ within the situation, the divinity of God within the situation. We see somebody in need, we see an accident, we see a broken home, and what do? We go in and pray affirming that there is God in the midst of these circumstances. We don't sit and marinate in the problem. And that's the second point I want to make about this mental feng shui. You get people together that want to change something, and they're angry. And what you're going to get is an angry outcome. Mother Teresa once said, "I'm not going to march against the Vietnam War, but if you have a march for peace, I'll be there." It's a subtle difference, but it makes a world of difference. You see, how you approach your life and the attitude that you have and the way that you comport yourself daily is what is going to be the contents of your life. It's what you're going to remember. Therefore, if you rearrange your prejudices and then, as some people do, wrap a halo around them and say, "God agrees with me," then you really can't get through to you. Nobody can, because you're convinced God is on your side in the negative things you have said and displayed towards other people. It becomes very difficult for you to pull this back in and say, "I was wrong." Those are three words that we are terrified of. I know I have been that way. I have never wanted to say, never enjoyed saying I was wrong, but when I did, and I felt I was, and I did, I felt lighter. You see, God does come in and sustain us even when we don't think so. When we let go of our sacred prejudices, the sacred cows of negativity, we really do feel lighter, even if we feel a little lost without them. Sometimes we've hung on to them so long, we don't know what to do without them. And we've feng shui'd them to the back of our minds so far and so out of sight that we feel like they don't bother us anymore. And I'm telling you, they do. Because a feeling buried alive just doesn't die. So what do we do about it? How do we take the contents of our minds, really, and make them work for us? I think one of the things that we can do that's very good for us is to realize that if we had known better at the time, we would have done better. And if you think about that in the pure way I'm saying it, there'll be people who say, "Well, I know that there are folks who've done things and they knew better and they still did them." Did they really know better? Did they think they knew better? Or did we think that they thought they knew better? They expressed at the level of their consciousness at that time, as we have all done. And we all stand in need of the wonderful forgiveness of a new day and a new way. It doesn't mean prostrate yourself in grief and fear and upset before a reticent God. It means standing in the authority of your own power and saying, "As within, so without. As above in the kingdom of heaven, so below." This was the message of Buddha. As you think, so you are. Christ Jesus said, as you think, you become. This is the message of unity. It is important that we not dance around the periphery of unity anymore, but we go solidly into what it means from the very beginning. We come from wonderful, proud roots of transcendental new thought that properly says love is the way to live. And how are we going to do that? A group of principles were taken from Scripture and holy books all around the world. They were put together and promulgated by Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, and they said, we properly stake our lives on this, we build Unity Village around this, and we're going to shake the mighty world with what we do. And they still are doing it. Not that we're entering protests and march and things like that. We're changing ourselves, and as we change ourselves, then true change can occur outside us. Change by fiat, change by dictate, and change by order rarely works. It's a wonderful way to run a city, for example, with traffic lights and stop signs. It's a wonderful way to balance books for money. Organization is necessary in many places, but in the spirit, in the things that you want to do and accomplish and be, I think there needs to be a certain wildness in it. I think you need to open your arms to spirit wide and say, come in and blow out those things I no longer need. And I no longer have to worry about how I'm going to arrange this prejudice, this incident, this anger, this negativity. It all is going to be in divine order, under grace, perfectly, because I'm choosing to think a different way. I guess you could tell this morning I'm real excited about this, and the reason that I am is because I stayed up sort of late last night thinking about what would be the message that I'd want to give if I addressed this church for the very first time today. I've done this now for 2 years. I love every moment of it. But I think every now and then we have to retool ourselves, step back, let things catch up, and go forward. It's nothing different than what I've said to begin with, but I've come to understand some things a little differently than I had before. So if you want to go home and change your physical setting, if you believe that that's going to bring you inner peace and direction, if it's going to feel better, by all means do it. But realize that it has its genesis, its very beginning is in your mind, as is life. You see, I've seen a person be able to be alive to their very toes in the middle of boxes and newspapers and trash bags. That was my father. And I've also seen people who have had the perfect surroundings. You even saw vacuum cleaner tracks on the floor, and they couldn't wait till 4 o'clock came to drink because they were miserable. You see, it doesn't always fit just the way we think it does. My father was a very self-actualized man, and the person that I'm talking about that drank was a very, very sad person. Well, Tony came to the idea that really he was all right the way he was, and I really said hallelujah to that. He went back to the work that he had given up to be what he called a new age traveler and a guy with no responsibility. He found out, as he said to me, I was more of a bum than I was a seeker. See, sometimes we can pack all of our responsibilities up and say, I don't want them, and throw them out and say, I'm walking away from this and I'm going to be enlightened. No, if you're doing it right, you're going to take those challenges and you're going to turn them into the opportunities that they're meant to be. You won't negate or walk away from your responsibilities. In the 1970s, Wayne Dyer was asked about his book, Your Erroneous Zones, where he talked about complete elimination of various areas of your personality that were dysfunctional or didn't work. And he said, it was asked a question, what if everybody did this, was self-actualized and did what they want to do? And his answer is, they're not. But even if they did, what a wonderful world where people are aligned with their sole purpose and they're doing things responsibly and making choices critically because they've thought them out, because they're being true to the divinity within them. Take the furniture of your mind and make it work for you. You're not going to forget that thing that happened. We do have memories. but it can be alchemized in a way that helps you walk up and face and touch life in a new way. Those things that were meant to hurt and harm us, as Scripture says, will be turned to good before our very eyes when the Spirit in us is right and receptive and ready. In this church, I see bright, receptive, ready, and renewed people that want to go out and make a difference, and this church will grow from the inside out. That's the way it's done properly. If I tell you that this is the ABC 1-2-3 way to grow a church, I am micromanaging, controlling, and I'm doing no good. My good is to inspire. My good is for you to catch a vision that I've caught of Unity of Bernie and that I've caught for my life and that I've caught for the world. There was a fella that talked to Napoleon Hill once, and Hill asked him what he wanted to do. The man was Clement Stone, and Stone said, "All I want to do is change the world." When the place you have to do it to begin that, it looks you right in the mirror. So rearrange it. Rearrange your house. Rearrange those things that you want to, but also remember the mental rearrangement is far more important. The thoughts you think, the things and ideas that you entertain about yourself and about other people is life lived every day. It becomes your way of living, sometimes by default, because you're running on the autopilot of choice that you made a long time ago and saying that it's now. It's not. Today is a new day. And you get out of it just what you put into it. And the mistakes you've made become the fertilizer for which you plant new plants and reap new rewards. The message of new thought is always newness. It's always a way of saying, you are one and whole, and we are one and whole. And we come together in this divine energy to resonate with one another to the highest truth that's inside ourselves. What more blessed thing could we want? What higher thing could we aspire to than to walk, this path of ourselves being integrated, full of integrity, and whole? I don't see people as broken. I don't see people as in need of help. I see people as they can be, and my job is to remind them of that. And that starts with me. And I do that on a daily basis, and I hope you all have some type of practice that does that too. So don't run from the things that bother you, or the things that you even overcame that sometimes spreads the shadow of memory across you today. Sometimes I think that's a mind's perverse way, the ego's perverse way of trying to get in the way of your growth, of what's called self-sabotage. You can smile to yourself and remember, I overcame that. I felt that. I've dealt with it. I'm moving on. And if you haven't, now's a perfect time to do it. Rearranging your thoughts, rearranging your mind, and knowing that as you do this, the greatest power in the world is with you. The power that raises seedlings from nothing, that plants from nothing, that births babies and grows literally everything in this world. Don't become so accustomed to that that you lose the fresh vision of the fact that it's inside you too. Don't become so enamored with those things outside of you that you lose sight of what's going on inside you. I salute your inner divinity. And I hope this year is the best for you. And I hope that as you arrange the contents of your mind, you do it in a way that works for you. And how will you know that? You'll feel lighter. You'll feel happier. And many people will come to you, or some people come to you and say, I don't know what you've got, but I want some of it. You see, when we have to proselytize, we're coming from a place of lack. When we're an example and they come to us, we're coming from a place of abundance. I think all of us want to feel abundant, to be abundant, whether it's love, praise, all these wonderful emotions that we have to give inside ourselves to others. We have to give it to ourselves first in order to see it out there. We get what we look for. Angry people live in an angry universe. Happy people live in a happy universe. The choice is yours. The population of your thought is your responsibility. I salute you in your undertaking of these things to do for yourself. When you're doing for yourself, you're doing it for others and for God. What a wonderful thing to do. What a great way to live. I affirm new thought right here, right now, this year. And so it is.